I'm excited to have a guest. It's usually just me and Danny, and I feel like last episode we really veered. We like didn't have anyone to rein us in, and so we kind of went a little bit off the rail.
Are you saying I'm not enough for you, Joy?
No, you're more than enough. You're perfect. This is Great Idea, a Babysitter's Club podcast. I'm your host, Joy.
And I'm Danny.
And Great Idea gets its name from Christie's Great Idea, the first book of Anne and Martin's iconic series, Babysitter's Club. And also from the fact that everyone thinks their podcast is a great idea, and we hope that ours actually is. We will be diving into all things Babysitter's Club, or BSC, and today is the 8th episode. And I looked that up before we recorded so that I wouldn't get it wrong, like I have for the last 8 episodes. And we have a guest.
We're very excited to welcome Charlotte Abbozzi, who is a multi-genre writer, filmmaker, and pop culture expert living in Providence. She's also been a babysitter longer than she's been anything else.
It's true. It is true. Hello. Hi. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Excited to have you as well.
Also, this is a great idea. I'm not even just saying that. It is a brilliant idea. I would even argue it's better than Christie's great idea.
Oh, that's a bold statement.
It is. I'm coming in strong.
I think that's the highest praise we could have received. I think Christie would be real mad about it, though.
So mad. I mean, yeah, I feel blessed. I feel like we didn't even tell you to say that.
Oh, no, not at all. It's truly from the bottom of my heart.
This is a very unscripted podcast.
It is. And this is an unsponsored promo. But truly, when I first found out about this podcast, I'm like, I don't listen to many or any podcasts, but I'm like, oh, no, I need to this one. So 100% a great idea, a brilliant idea. So thank you.
We appreciate that so much, especially because I feel like this is a very niche interest of ours.
So niche, but it's like me all over it. I'm like, oh yeah, I feel seen my whole life.
Well, yeah, in your bio, you said that you've been a babysitter longer than anything else. Like, what does that mean for you?
Yeah, I have been a caretaker for children truly longer than I've been anything else in my life. I guess other than like, you know, a daughter and a sister and like, I guess a student, but Babysitter's Club was the jump off for that. We had so many of the books. We had this like home library with a lot of like hand-me-down books, all of the series you can think of. You know, we had Sweet Valley High, we had Goosebumps. We had a lot of Magic School Bus books and, of course, The Babysitter's Club. And I remember reading it and the moment where the kid kits were introduced, I'm like, it was just groundbreaking for me. And I'm like, I need to become a babysitter so I can bring kid kits. But I also like never really had a lot of things. So I remember vividly trying to figure out like, oh, what I'm going to assemble for my kit. And it was just like my toys. And it you know, kind of flopped. But directly inspired by those girls in Babysitter's Club. So thank you, Anne and Martin. Because still to this day I babysit. Truly because I just love kids. It's like nice for extra cash, but I always need babies and toddlers and young people around me. So
that's not this Christy Thomas like thrive for business. Yeah, I mean, did you ever actually end up bringing a kid kit somewhere, or was it?
I feel like when I first started babysitting, the kids would come over to my house because I live right next to, like right across the street from the elementary school, and so I would just share what I had. Which was not much, but the intention was all there. And so, yes, I will say.
I love that. We love the Kid Kits on this show.
Yeah.
And now you're just a game changer. Part of a Kid Kit as an adult with your Kid Kit recommendation, which we will get to later.
Yes, yes. I have so many. I'm so excited.
Yeah. Do we want to talk about this episode? We're talking about episode 4 from the Netflix series, which is also called Marianne Saves the Day, like the book. It's semi-similar to the book, but not. There's a lot of changes.
Yeah, pretty major changes. Where should we start?
Should we ask our guests, is there any big things that stuck out to you that...
Oh, yes. Well, where to even start? So I love the opening for this episode for a lot of reasons. I think it's a really good character introduction in terms of, like, I guess, you know, from a film, TV aspect. And what is the most striking for me is that in the distance, as like Marianne starts her like intro monologue about like how all her friends are better than her, which we will unpack. In the distance, she has a copy of Beloved by Toni Morrison on her dresser while she's going on about a tirade about how she's not like cool or whatever. And I'm like, excuse me, you are reading Beloved like in middle school? Come on. I think you actually won. So that's huge. And I feel like that was such a, I don't know, a little cute character addition and introduction that, I don't know, they definitely thought of, but like, you know, my eye as a Toni Morrison scholar and also as a Babysitter Club scholar, I'm like, oh wow, yeah, Marianne's reading some Morrison. Let's go. So love that. Just had to kick that off.
Yeah, I didn't.
I'm so sad I didn't catch that detail. But now she figured it out. I love that.
I also love that she's like, I can't believe I have to wear like overalls like a baby. And not to be like, do the thing where we say everything is gay, but I'm like, you're just like all of the gay people on TikTok. Overalls are like,
oh, that was so much
fashionable. But yeah, I really like that. I also really liked that they kept in the fact that she's close with Mimi. I think that it's really sweet that she like has, because they decided not to have her mother in the episode, which we can get into, because that's a big part of her characterization, but that she has this like woman of color that like she can connect to her mom in that way, I really appreciated.
Should we just jump in and talk about the fact that she's black?
Oh, let's go.
Let's just talk about the race. So in the books, Marianne is white. In the show, she is a light-skinned black girl. What are our thoughts and feelings?
Oh gosh, so many thoughts and feelings. With all due respect to the actress who plays Marianne. Okay, she is great. But with Marianne, I'm like, she is just, for me, I just can't get over how light-skinned she is. Truly, it is something that is so jarring to me. And I know that's like Netflix's bag and like very much their thing. There is a collage of basically like all the young women characters of like the Netflix original show series and how all the like black girls look like Marianne. And it's just, it is like not just, because right, we know that like light skin in Hollywood is the standard and just around the world and in terms of black people, but there's something about Marianne's character, I'm just like, y'all really just could have left her white, because it is just like, again, no disrespect to her, but it's truly like she's the embodiment of like the one drop rule, it feels. And it's just, for me, it just really like, I don't know, it fucks me up looking at it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Danny and I have talked about how this is like, just feels like such a missed opportunity for them. Like, and like, especially not having her mom and then having her white dad. And we're like, you couldn't have had a single dad of color have a prominent role, like a black dad, like in this show. So you have like the dead black woman as the mom, and like, and something that we've thought about a lot too is that like it feels like the show did diversity, but like didn't make an effort to kind of go beyond that surface level in a lot of ways, besides like Claudia, but Claudia was written to be not white.
Absolutely.
And the contrast between Claudia's storyline and the way that race is part of Claudia's story, like it is so rich. And I think it's maybe episode 6. So we haven't gotten to the episode that deals with the Japanese internment camps. And that, you know, that's going to be really interesting to talk about. But already we know that Claudia's race is handled so richly in the story. And it feels like Marianne and Dawn, whose race was also changed. So Dawn is white in the books. Dawn is Latina here. And she's a Latina girl from California. And that's a big deal, which we can get to, that is that she's from California. Oh my God. Okay. But anyways.
Help really represented Danny.
It definitely, with both of them, just feels like such colorblind storytelling. Like their race isn't handled with nearly the same amount of like nuance and respect that Claudia's is. And I just think of, I don't know, Dawn, it's like you have to know she's Latina, so we have her pull out sage in the middle of the episode. And with Marianne, right? And I mean, okay, we can get to the whole witch scene later on, but oh God. But with Marianne,
neo shamanism,
oh man, there's so much there.
Also, Esme, there was so much. It's Esme / Morbida Destiny.
There's so
much. But I'm also like, it's so funny because I know in the later episodes, I feel like there is a moment, yeah, where Dawn gets a call from her dad, and her dad is white. So between her mom and her dad, and I know obviously like white Latinx folk exist, but like for me, I'm just like, so which one is the Latina? Like, which one is it? Because I'm like, is it supposed to be her mom, Sharon? Sharon, who doesn't know how to raise a kid? Like,
her name is literally Sharon. Oh my God.
Her name is literally Sharon.
You're so right.
And she's from Connecticut. Like,
yeah, she's brown from people Stony from Brook.
But like,
yeah. Yeah. No, but she's from Stony Brook in particular. Like, she is from that town.
Oh, God.
And she dated the whitest of the white men. And I mean, that's also, we will get there.
Yeah. Oh man. So much to talk about in like one episode, but going back to Marianne feeling colorblind, there's that line towards the end of the episode where she's having like a sweet bonding moment with her father and realizing that her father is proud of her. And, you know, she asks him, can I do my hair differently? Can I wear different clothes? And it is a genuinely sweet moment, but this one line of him saying, oh, I just put your hair in braids because that's the only thing your mother taught me how to do. Marianne's mother has been dead for like 11 years. I'm just...
Right, dude, right.
Dude, you're telling me that you haven't learned how to do your black daughter's hair in a different way One YouTube tutorial, that's all it takes.
What's amazing is that's such a like era. They really could have used that for her character too, because it's like, okay, white dad doesn't know how to do black daughter's hair, like, you know, textbook like kind of adoption, you know, fantasy story that you see on YouTube or whatever, but like that's literally her blood father. And it's just the way that she starts off bashing her hair is so like coded and like racialized, right? And it's just like, of course, like it's two pigtails, but they're braids, which is so specific to black girls and like, you know, black culture. And when she has this moment of transformation, which I also love, her hair is out of braids. So it just, for me, I'm like, oh wow, that could have been a great moment to see her, like, I don't know. I mean, it would have, again, with her skin color and her being as light as she is, it would have been a little jarring. But I'm like, why couldn't we have seen a grown up, you know, quote unquote grown up hairstyle with braids? Like, why did it need to be out of braids for her to like find herself adult like? A lot to unpack.
Yeah, like her look at the end is super cute, and I love that she feels more confident in it, but that is a really good point. It's loaded, and it just feels like they didn't have either, I don't think sensitivity reader is even the right term here, but just like Black writers. And I think, Joy, when we looked up the writers in a previous episode, we looked up some of the writers on a team. And I don't remember. Were there, I think you said there was like one Black woman writer, maybe?
Yeah, I think there's like one Black woman on the team. I looked up the main writer for this episode and it's a white woman. Which like makes sense given just the huge oversights, just like glaring issues throughout.
Yeah, I looked up the writers too when I, because this is my third rewatch and, you know, definitely three of many to come. But in my first go around, I remember truly being really impressed. And I'm just like, I want to write for this show. Who's on this team? And seeing like mostly white names, really trying to get in there on the IMDb. But what's wild is like for Claudia's episode, if I'm not mistaken, I believe that is an Asian writer. And I'm just like, yeah, that's why it's the best like episode of the series. And like, it's so, you can tell from all, every, I feel like all of like Claudia's like big moments from the Halloween party. And then also like the Mimi episode, I'm like, yeah, this is really well considered. And it just also shows you like how, I don't know, it just puts, it puts a value on like the characters and it puts a value on their race, because then Claudia is just all her race and she doesn't really kind of like get to be anything outside. I mean, she does, but then it's just like with Marianne and Dawn, it's, I don't know, it's just interesting. It's like, what are we choosing to focus on? But
Yeah, I know specifically with Claudia's episode, one of the writers for that episode and who is really involved with it is, I think she's mixed, right? And I have some issues, but like overall, I think it was well done. And I think that the main writer's husband's family was in camp. So, and the actress that plays Mimi was. So like, I think that you get that nuance. Yeah. No, I thought about that, but I was like, yeah, you're right.
It does kind of feel like they knew that Claudia Kishi has been an important character for Asian American communities for decades. And so it's like they knew, oh, we can't fuck this up. We're going to have to make extra sure that this is really good. And we're going to hire Asian writers to write this episode. But there wasn't some established fan base around Marianne being a Black girl or Dawn being a Latina girl, because those are totally new changes. So it's like they just didn't, you know, they just didn't think like, oh, well, maybe we should specifically hire a Black woman writer to write the Marianne episodes, or a Latina writer to, I mean, we haven't looked up the writer for Dawn's episode. Maybe I'm wrong, but it just generally, I don't know. I have many thoughts that I'll get to in future podcast episodes about Dawn's characterization, but yeah, just Marianne. Also, how do we feel about like Marianne's personality in the light of her no longer being white? Because I know, Charlotte, like when the show first came out, we were texting a little bit about it, and you mentioned that you had thoughts about Marianne and Christy's friendship with the new racial dynamic.
Oh, yes. So I am so glad you brought that up. Because first off, Marianne's character, as someone who, again, like it from the beginning, the introduction, her character introduction is her listing how much better her friends are than her and like what they have, right? Like Christy like rocks the normcore look, she says, you know, Stacy is so chic that she's is practically like speaks French or something like that. And I forgot what she says about Claudia, but we know like Claudia's that girl in the looks department. So that's that. And then so it just like starts off with this self-deprecation. So our introduction to the young Black girl is a self-deprecating character, which is just like, I mean, I'm not saying I don't identify, because that's definitely my comedic beat, but like, I am a 25-year-old adult woman, right? Like, versus young Black girls, it's just like, okay, here I am, the outlier in my group, and that kind of means that everyone is cooler than me, and everyone has these things. And what's wild about that is not just that whole, like, oh, I'm cool, like the cool and the look, because she's basing that factor of quote unquote cool on looks in that introduction. She's looking in the mirror, and it's interesting because she's doing her hair. So that whole like bit about the dad is kind of like, well, she's still doing these braids herself. So, but she's like wrapping up her hair, and she's basically in the mirror, and you know, voiceover saying how much she hates her look, not necessarily face or her skin or any of these, you know, like phenotypes of like Black folk, but she hates all the other parts about her, which is really, really hard, because then it just like, it roller coasters into just something else, her dynamic with Christy, which we clocked from like episode one. Christy, if I was 13 years old, I can't say this because I've never been in a physical fight before, but wow, Christy really deserves the hands. She deserves the hands. She is so, dare I say, abusive to Marianne. The episode, I think it's episode 3, the one right before this one, where Marianne's dad grounds her, like, you know, because she missed her curfew, and Christy gets mad at Marianne for her own dad's actions, and she's like insulting him, and all the other girls are just like watching this insulting happen, and Marianne says one thing in defense, and it's just, it's not even like, it wasn't even at the level of, well, at least I have a dad. Like, she didn't even say anything that, like, vicious, but it was kind of around that idea. Or I think she was just like, well, you wouldn't know, or something like that. And Christy becomes centered. Christy runs off. It becomes her emotions. It becomes something that Marianne has to apologize for when Christy sat at the lunch table bashing her only living parent. Because that's the thing, it's just like, yo, Christy, your dad ain't dead. He's just a deadbeat. Like, whereas like Marianne's mom is literally dead, and she only has her dad.
Yeah. Christy Thomas found dead in 2020. Murdered.
Oh my God.
I mean, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. And I say this as a Christy stan. Mm-hmm. If you listen to other episodes, everyone knows that I love Christy. But it is true that, I mean, again, I just feel like the writers didn't think through all of the significance of what it would mean to make Marianne specifically Black, because now you've also changed the dynamics of her friendships, and it's no longer okay for Christy. I mean, not that it's ever okay for Christy to be rude and bossy to her friends, and she has to grow and learn that, but still, it's even more uncomfortable now that she's treating her Black friend this way.
Yeah, especially since they are the best friend pair. Like, they start off the series, right? Like, in the books and in the show, they are, it's those two kind of like against the world. So it's just like, even in the first episode, Marianne has the voiceover, I believe, and she's just like, maybe it's Christy, but either way, it's established that Marianne does the listening and Christy does all the talking, which I'm just like,
Christy says that in the first episode.
Yeah. What? And it's, yeah, like, so yeah, this like weird submissiveness that just is like entrenched in Marianne's character is so hard, because one, it's like, okay, well, this is actually, you know, this Black girl, not for the first time, but like, it is a different take on like the Black girl in these shows, right? Usually it's like not one of submission, right? If we think of like, I don't know, like The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina or like what have you, usually they have an active role, or they're like fun, they have something about them. But like Marianne's whole character type in the, I guess like the first three, not until this episode, is her whole thing is that she's submissive, and it really kind of like builds up and explodes this episode, which we can get to.
I mean, that kind of relates, Danny, you sent me an article that someone wrote about Marianne. Do you want to talk about that at all?
Yeah, I can kind of summarize it really briefly. It was written by a Black woman, like, talking about representation in the media and the significance of Marianne to her. And it was a positive take on Marianne. And I would say, I guess it's the silver lining of it, because I personally think that if we're quantifying it, the bad kind of outweighs the good here. But the silver lining of it is that, you know, this writer in particular felt that Marianne serves as representation of innocence, which is something that Black girls don't get to see a lot. And so having that like shy, wallflower, nerdy character is something that a lot of Black girls aren't afforded in the media. And so for that reason, for this writer, it was like a breath of fresh air type of thing. But, you know, I still think that doesn't negate all of these other concerns about her characterization.
Yeah, I do like that take. And I see it because there are, like, just rewatching, I'm just like, oh, Marianne, because there are so many relatable moments, right, as the nerdy girl, as the, like, girl with bad jokes. I mean, not me, I'm saying, but like, I'm like, oh, my jokes are good. And, you know, I was nerdy, but like, not like Marianne. But I'm like, oh, there are so many good, like, qualities that I do think, like, Black girls have innately that don't necessarily get represented. And the innocence is so well done, as like that writer points it out. Because I was also thinking about, like, I guess, like, another thing that frustrates me about Marianne is I'm like, damn, why she gotta be exactly like the way society has, like, truly made Black girls be? And this is, and I mean this by, like, you know, yes, we have these stereotypes, but in reality, and I don't know if this is necessarily a bad thing, but for me, like, in reality, that's all of us. Like, Marianne, that whole episode is just, like, very jarring, because I'm like, wow, I am a person who says sorry every 2 seconds. I am a person who has a hard time standing up for herself. I am a pushover. I am, like, all of these things that she gets attacked for just because she wants to be liked, just because she's shy. I was so shy growing up. And I'm just like, why are all these things character flaws when, like, that is actually what we have to do to survive, to not be labeled these things? It's such, like, a catch 22 for that, because I'm like, oh, like, this is it. And it's also, like, just the way of, like, young women, I think, and young women of color, and, like, young girls in particular, like, just kind of trying to be kind, trying to be the peacemaker, the nice one, all of these things. And I guess that's always so hard. It's like, yes, Marianne is innocent. And it's true. It's like, Black girls are innocent. We are these innocent, like, beings that, like, get, you know, a whole bunch of projection from so many different types of people within our own communities and outside of our communities as well. And for, I don't know, Marianne, she works it out, but just, like, her being such a people-pleasing pushover is really hard for me.
Yeah, I think you're really right. And that just makes me think, I mean, how much more poignant? How do I say that word? Can someone please say it for me so I can hear it?
Poignant?
Poignant? Okay.
Poignant?
Yeah. Poignant.
Jesus Christ. But we need you on the show. Get a poet on the show.
The G is silent. It's actually a weird word.
Poignant. Yeah?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It just makes me think, how much more poignant would this representation have been if Marianne wasn't so light-skinned? If she had been a dark-skinned Black girl, all of these things that you've been mentioning, I feel like that just, like, doubles the meaning of it, you know? Mm-hmm. It's such a missed opportunity.
Yeah. It's such a missed opportunity, because when I look, first of all, like, representational politics, like, especially now, representation, while awesome, we know that representation will not save us. Mm-hmm. And a lot of folks think representation is akin to, like, freedom or justice or whatever. I know someone who calls it the representational industrial complex, which is so funny. I was like, not the RIC.
Oh my God. I have not heard that term before, but now I'm never going to be able to forget it. Wow.
It's so real. And so, like, especially this year, I've just kind of decolonized the way I think about representation. And also, I'm just like, again, like, as an abolitionist in, like, my real life, and I'm just like, you know, there are just so many bigger fish to fry. But when I look at Marianne, I don't see myself, which is fine because, again, I am a 25-year-old adult woman. But if I had a younger sibling, a younger cousin, or whoever, I don't think that if she looked at Marianne, she would also see herself. And that's clearly what Netflix was trying to do, right? Making Marianne specifically Black. They were like, this is going to be one for the Black girls, or one for the community. And it's just like, it is not, because I'm also curious to see, especially since Marianne's mother is dead and we don't get many visual moments of her in her life, or like, you know, outside of the picture moment. But it's like, I don't know. I'm like, do young white children read Marianne as Black? Do they even do that? Like, I know, like, the hair, perhaps, but also, she could also be Jewish. She really could. She really could. Or, and, like, white Jewish, right? Like, I know you can be Jewish and be multi-race. But, you know, so it's also just, like, she's just so, so, so fair to me. It is, like, unreal. It's I don't know. It's so strange. It's just so strange. Because I'm, like, even the, like, the lightest, like, mixed race person has a shred of melanin, and she, like, to me, like, she literally, like, all of her race is in her hair pattern, which, like, is not much. So, yeah, a missed opportunity for sure.
Yeah, no, I totally see that, hear that. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, thanks for letting me just, like, charge on so many thoughts, truly.
Oh, I love
because
it.
I just, like, I don't know. It's wild because Marianne should be my favorite character, and she's probably, like, second to last after Christy. I'm sorry, Danny. Like, I'm like, she is so, yeah, for me, it's a hard time. But this episode definitely, I feel like, is a lot of necessary redemption for her. And just, like, I think in terms of all the social issues that the writers tried to, you know, hit and talk about, I am really, really, like, pleased that Marianne had to handle, or, like, got the opportunity to handle the Bailey Delvecchio storyline. I'm really proud of her. Every time I watch it, I cry. every single time, because in that moment, who else but Marianne? And I feel like it's hard because, yes, this is children's programming, so obviously they're not going to reflect on this. But in my third rewatch, I was just like, wait, like, her friends are mad because she was sought after. That's also what's so violent to me. It's like they're mad because someone specifically asked her and she said yes, when they didn't, like, they didn't set it up in a way that, you know, Claudia picked up the phone and was like, it's for Marianne. Like, you know, she didn't do anything to really stress the rules. And again, this was someone's, I have so much to say, because when it was Christy's stepdad inviting all his clients to, or like all his friends to call the babysitter's club, it was okay. But then when Marianne's father's coworker specifically requests Marianne, it's a problem. And then we see why she specifically requested Marianne, because she's a phenomenal babysitter. But then it's like, who else would have handled Bailey Delvecchio's story better than Marianne? And it's just, In the aftermath of that, when they're like, I have some notes about that, how there are, like, no real apologies or no real retribution. I'm just like, why? I felt like that would have been a moment to focus on and say, like, oh, wait, like, this needed to happen. And Marianne, like, you were perfect for the job. And I don't know, they're just like, you're a hero, you ran and you rode in an ambulance, all these other stuff. But it's like, no, we need to talk about how the Black girl was able to advocate for a young trans girl that she was babysitting. That's the story. That's all the things that her friends should be impressed with. And she, I don't know, I just, like, we don't really get that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it does feel like there was so much opportunity. And again, if she hadn't been so light-skinned, but, like, there could have been these, like, because it's Netflix and it's a kids show, like, a lot of the morals are so heavy-handed. So, like, if they're gonna do that, then, like, there could have been this opportunity to be, like, this is like Marianne exploring like feeling cute and pretty and like embracing her blackness. Like it could have been like we like her then turning around to the other babysitters and being like, look, I learned this about like advocating for trans kids, like this is something we should all know. Like it could have been all these like little things. Those aren't even little things, but like these all these things at the end. And yeah, I think it really, again, missed opportunity. But you're right that there really was no conclusion to the conflict besides like Marianne like jokingly like jabs at Christy again, and then Christy's like, ah. So yeah, it's I was conflicted because I also think that it's really, that storyline is so sweet, and like I'm in this like babysitters club Facebook group, and there are some folks who are like upset about both these changes, like both Marianne being black, like Dawn being Latina, like it being not the character in the book and being Bailey instead. And I think that that's like has a lot of levels to it of like why people are mad about it, but it also like is sparking these conversations. And then I know someone who has a small kid, and like she was able to have a conversation about transness with her like 4-year-old, like 6-year-old, like it. So I was like, yeah, like representation is not freedom, it's not liberation, but like it is such a missed opportunity for Netflix to have like used what they have to do something with that. I mean, I'm not surprised, it's Netflix, but like yeah.
I have a few thoughts about that, which is that one, you're so right that the girls are really unfair to Marianne, and it's a frustrating moment in the writing because in the book the conflict is actually much more realistic because Marianne actually insults her friends in the book, and that's why they get really mad at her. Like they were all going at each other type of thing, you know, so it was like classic, like they say mean things to each other that they didn't mean, but it actually, you know, like there was a basis for them to be upset with Marianne, whereas in the show, the way they wrote the conflict is just like, how is your club not accounted for clients maybe just having a preferred sitter or developing a favorite? Like, come on, like Christy, hello, for all the planning that you do, like your club hasn't accounted for this. So like they're super unfair to her, and that's really frustrating. So like you're completely right that the conflict is just, it's just unfair. And then with Bailey's transness, like I do love the way that this episode explains it in a way that's accessible for kids, like the right hand left hand metaphor. I mean, this show isn't gonna be able to explain gender identity and the patriarchy and all of these things. I'm not expecting that from this show, so I thought the right hand left hand was a really nice touch. But it's like you said, instead of having Marianne learn that and kind of like pass on that knowledge to the other girls, instead what we get is Dawn, the liberal Californian, shoehorning in that progressive line and literally saying, like Marianne literally goes, oh, you seem to know a lot about this. And Dawn goes, well, I am from California. Oh my God.
She said... Also, like, why not base it? I love how it was like, well, I am from California, and not, oh, well, my dad is a member of the LGBTQ community.
Right?
Like, you know,
my like, dad I come from queer. A family where it's chill for my dad to be queer. Like, and maybe I also know some episode. Trans people.
It's literally the same episode. Like, it's not even like this was different episodes written by different writers. In the same episode, they had her say, my dad was gay, which on some level, they both always knew, which damn, like, that's a deep line.
Right.
Like, same, but like, wow.
Right? And then later on, she's just like, oh, yeah, that's well, I'm so- from California.
Yeah. That's so funny, and that really sends me, because I'm thinking about like my real life babysitting like escapades, and like one thing that's so universal about small children is like you ask them one question and they like start spilling like deep family tea. You'll be like, oh my God, I love the polka dots on your dress today. And they'll be like, oh, thank you, mommy picked it out for me before she moved out of daddy's house, and they're not seeing each other anymore, because they like they will start spilling tea like just off of one thing. And it's really amusing and hilarious because they just like don't know what they're doing, but I feel like they kind of do. And I feel like in that moment, that's exactly what Dawn does. It's like she sits at the lunch table, takes out her like kale smoothie and her salad that she's eating with chopsticks. Like, I don't know if y'all peep that.
Okay, but I do exclusively eat salad with chopsticks.
Okay, I love that. I love that.
Which I think has more to do with, like, being, like, Japanese American than being, like, from California.
Right, right. It's totally.
That's, like, maybe that's, like, other parts of your personality that's not being from California. But also, people from California do not shut up about being from California.
That very, yes, very true. And also, if I moved from California to Stony Brook, that's all I would say too. So, like, I get it. I love Dawn so much. Like, but what's so wild is, like, in that moment, she just spills. She's just like, yeah, my parents finally got divorced. And it's such an interesting moment, and just also a cute moment between, like, two new friends, because you see Marianne, like, calculating and thinking about her words and the questions that she's gonna ask, which is, like, really great acting. Like, it's just it's a great scene, but it's just so funny because she says my parents finally got divorced because my dad is gay, which they always knew. Like, it just goes really deep, and all Marianne was like, what brings you to Stony Brook?
Oh, and, God. Well, and then Marianne's like, you want to come over, and I was like, oh my God.
Amazing. I know. I really, like, appreciate, I don't know if y'all feel this way too. I feel like Dawn's, because it's interesting, because yes, we know Marianne from the first three episodes, but this is, like, again, new character introduction. It's her episode, but then, like, Dawn comes, and so it's kind of like we're meeting these two characters for the first time, which I found interesting, them being both of color, but I think it was well done or well handled. I feel like I needed Marianne to not be, like, alone and an outcast. I, like, really, like, valued Dawn's, like, placement in this episode, and, like, ultimately their friendship together. Like, I don't know if y'all clocked that they have a cute little handshake. It's so cute.
Yeah, no, I think that it's really great, and she, yeah, I mean, I think that it is, I mean, it doesn't make Christy look any better that she's, like, super jealous of Dawn. It is, in some ways, I was, like, we talked about this, like, about the book, that, like, it's very, like, Marianne has a new girlfriend, and Christy, like, can't deal, but it's also, like, friendships, but, yeah, I love that they get to be, like, together, and, like, that Marianne doesn't have to feel like the only person of color in Stony Brook, even though, as we've discussed, that's complicated on several levels with both of them. But yeah, I know, I think that they're just, it is very tender, and, like, I know that Danny has talked about having some issues with, like, how Dawn, with her, like, Latina-ness, has to be, like, very grown up, and, like, that's something that we, like, will need to unpack eventually, but also, like, she does drop some, like, really, really wonderful affirmations on Marianne throughout this episode. Like, when Marianne, like, is embarrassed at the front of this ceremony, and she, like, runs away, and, like, you can tell that she's, like, the dynamics from her friendships where she's, like, so scared. She's, like, don't you think I'm a baby? Don't you hate me? Don't you, like, think, like, aren't you embarrassed by me? And Dawn's, like, this is an overwhelming situation, and you were overwhelmed. Like, that's normal. That's, like, fine. You're fine. Yeah. Let's go do something that makes you feel comfortable. And I was, like,
yeah. Dawn is amazing. She says, she's just, like, not a new moon ceremony is not everyone's cup of tea, which is, like, so cute and so funny. And it's just, like, it's so amazing, because in that moment where Marianne's, like, kind of, like, what's wrong with you? Don't you think I'm these things? And, like, she's clearly, like, doing this, like, catastrophizing, like, right? Like, just kind of, like, going and, like, already kind of almost, like, ending the friendship in a way, like, just, you know, leave me alone, like, kind of, like, don't you think I'm this? Don't you expect this of me? And when Marianne says, or when Dawn says that, she's just like, but if you think you are those things, who am I to tell you that you are? I was like, ah! This reflective moment. It was amazing.
Dawn is super emotionally intelligent. Love her and Marianne's friendship. And I agree that it does not make Marianne's friends look good, not just Christy, but also Claudia and Stacy, that she is already so ready to, like, face rejection from Dawn, or just to face a put down from Dawn. So that's true. That really just doesn't reflect well on any of Marianne's friends, which suck. But I'm so happy that Dawn comes into her life and is a different perspective, like clean slate, and just appreciates Marianne for who she is so early on in the friendship. That said, let's just talk about that new moon ceremony, everything with Dawn, the sage, her ethnically ambiguous mother, her aunt is Esme and she's a white witch, but she's a spiritual healer, and neo-shamanism, and oh my god, like I don't know where to begin. Oh my god.
Hello, this is Joy from the, I guess, kind of future, tuning in to let you know that we had so much fun recording this episode that it went, kind of very long. So, we're doing two parts. Hehe, time that out well. We'll be bringing you part two of our conversation with Charlotte Abatsi, and myself and Danny in part two of Marianne Saves the Day, the Netflix show with great idea podcast. Yeah, so tune in for part two. We're grateful that you all are listening. Please support Charlotte and Charlotte's work, and we'll see you next time. Stay gay, ladies.